Welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. I'm Brandon. I'm here with my co-host, Josh.
Hello.
And we are the greatest American FPL players out there. Isn't that right, Josh?
Yeah, I hope you start every podcast with that awkward sentence.
And we're really the best. I mean, I'm close to being the best after game week one in the FPL. I can tell you my rank overall in the world right now is 2,038,359. So I'm pretty close to the top, you know, considering there are a little more than 3 million people in the league.
That's actually amazing, right? Because you and obviously it's week one. I'm sure, you know, next week you're going to, you know, jump past 1.5 million of them or something like that. But I mean, to be that far down after 1 week, I mean, I'm 1.4 million, so yeah. I barely have a head to stand. I think I beat you by 5 points this week. It was such a crazy opening week.
It was. We were watching this. We were briefly obsessed with this downfall Hitler bunker meme that was making the rounds today, where Hitler was just cursing everyone and saying, why can't I do well just once in game week one? Game week one is always just so tumultuous and emotional, and there's so much you think you know but you don't know going into it, and it never works out.
And, of course, naturally in that first week, every single player who scores is a player you had on your team at one point, you know, because you're obsessive about it, you know, you go through every combination. I mean, I had Nathan Redmond in my team for like 2 weeks. It only took him out a couple days ago.
And you thought he was so actually Method Man's buddy, Redman, and you're like, I just need a little flow in the midfield.
Exactly, exactly.
What's most worrying to me is not that I did so poorly this week, but that I finished with 28 points, 6 below the league average. And it always stings, no matter what, to be below the average, because if you really play diligently and regularly, it's rare that you are below the average.
It's true. I mean, it was just a strange opening week. I mean, very few players who are, you know, targeted to, you know, who you'd expect to perform well. I mean, Eden Hazard, Harry Kane, maybe less for Kane because he was on the road to Man U.
Yeah, the entire Arsenal midfield.
The entire Arsenal midfield. Sergio Aguero didn't come on until the, you know, in the 60th minute.
So let's touch upon briefly how we watched this opening weekend, because I heard you say this on Saturday, that the opening weekend of the Premier League is essentially a holiday. You wake up early, it's Christmas morning.
It's true. And we, as is our custom, we went to the Catskills to watch the opening weekend.
Yeah, it was a little awkward because our fellow league mate, Trevor, manager of Run and Riot FC, we were having a bachelor party for him at this rental up in the Catskills. So we were in a house. There were 7 of us total. I think 3 of us, me, you, and Trevor, were Premier League fans. And the 4 other guys could not give a shit about sports in general, yeah. I think.
Thank God Trevor was. Because if we were at a bachelor party and the guy didn't care about the Premier League, the problem was it was almost too set up for us. I mean, you know, you're up in the mountains. I mean, all I read in the Airbnb was that there was no reception up there. And I was like, well, you know what? We'll just track the scores on our phone. Like, we could try to get them on the iPads, but it's probably not going to work. And then we get up there, and it's like a massive TV.
Yeah, like
multiple sports package. Yeah,
multiple dishes on the roof, giant high definition, sectional couches just surrounding this TV.
It could not have been set up better for us to watch 6 hours.
We also had a refrigerator full of about 150 cans of beer, so yeah.
It was amazing.
So we were able to watch, I mean, basically, I felt like I watched as much Premier League as I would have if I were just at home. So I think we've got enough ammunition to get us through our episode for game week one here.
We had a 3-screen situation during the Saturday game. So it really was like being at home or at a sports bar.
So what we're going to do is we're going to focus on 3 games, but basically give everyone a quick recap of our thoughts on the opening week. And then later on in the podcast, we're going to look ahead to what's coming up in game week two and players and fixtures that we're going to key in on. But first, Josh, I thought we could just talk about our MVPs and our losers for this week. We're each going to give one of each. So you want to start us off. Who was the one player that you either you had him in your squad or you watched him play and you thought, this guy, he's the MVP of the week?
All right. Well, this one's pretty obvious, but Yaya Toure definitely has to be the MVP of the week. Or almost it, – it's not a surprise if you've been playing fantasy for a few years to see something like this from Yaya Toure. I mean, he scored two goals. One of them was an absolute cracker, as they say.
A laser beam.
A laser beam, if you will.
I think that's a term more used in hockey, but we'll go with it.
It was interesting, too, because I mentioned before we started the recording that you're already seeing the effect of the chips, as they call them, the triple captain, the all-out attack, the bench boost. And somebody,
how do you feel about that term, by the way, chip?
I don't like it at all. It sounds really – it sounds very British in a way that I don't care for. It's
but you like not, you like hanging out in the casino and playing a little blackjack. Chips don't.
I think it sounds too gamey to me. It's too. I mean, I realize
lurid. It's too lurid.
I realize the fantasy league is a game, but if I think about it as a game, it feels really lame. You know, it's more like a thing I'm doing as a way to watch. Yeah, I don't know. Just the chip thing doesn't quite work. What do you think about it?
I actually kind of like it. My assumption was we were going to go through the season and we would just call them buttons, like buttons you would press. Though I guess buttons also a reference to a card table object. But I do prefer chip as opposed to button. It makes it feel, I don't know, it sounds sexy to me.
I would prefer options or
choices
or
birthrights.
Even gimmicks would work for me. I would be fine with gimmicks.
So you were saying that somebody had Yaya Toure and they played the triple captain chip with him?
Right, so they got 48 points from Yaya alone, and I think they finished over 100. There's always someone, and in any given week, the highest scorer always has a ridiculous team. No one ever has a perfect team, you know, set for the long run that gets the point total.
The people with the top point total, they definitely fell backwards into it.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's your guess as to what Yaya's value is going to be at this time next week? Because he's going to go up.
Yeah, I assume that the price rise is the same as in years past, which I believe means that he can only rise or fall 0.3 million. So, you know, he's priced at 8.5 right now, which is a great price. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking with this stuff.
Oh, yeah. This is like prime knee-jerk season.
But honestly, I mean, an 8.5 million Man City player who is going to play every single game, who's always a threat to score, who, you know, missed some time last year with the African Cup of Nations, which probably threw his game off a little bit. I mean, there are a lot of reasons to pick him up. You know, it seems very obvious now.
Yeah.
So, he's going to explode. I had a more expensive Man City player, Raheem Sterling, who missed a golden opportunity.
It was gross. I was watching it on my phone at work, and I had that sort of G.I. Joe Cobra Twin moment where I felt your face scrunching up in pain as you surely watched it.
It really was terrible. I mean, I don't know how we missed it. This is what we were talking about. One thing I was thinking about when I was watching the games this weekend was that, you know, you start reading these articles and listening to podcasts, whatever, and suddenly these people are different than they were as if people changed that much in 2 months, right? Like, I didn't like having Raheem Sterling on my team last year when he played for Liverpool because he's a terrible finisher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his movement's great. He gets into good positions. He's super fast. But he's not a great finisher. And it kills his fantasy value. And
yeah, somehow you think the new context, he's like, oh, he's at Man City, he's going to be playing opposite David Silva, he's going to be getting all this great service, no problem.
Right. But I don't think the problem was chances for him with Liverpool, although I do think he'll have more chances with Man City.
Yeah.
I think that the problem is really that he has to just square it up more. I mean, it's sort of a Jack Wilshere problem, too, although Wilshere, I don't feel like Wilshere gets as many close-range opportunities as Sterling gets. So Yaya's my MVP. My LVP, or we got to come up with a better term for this. We need a cool term.
Loser. Just say loser.
Loser of the week. I'm going to give it to the entire Sunderland defense, which has clearly picked up where it left off last year. Just it's unreal. I mean, like, no one does it quite like Sunderland. You know, I basically won our league last year on the backs of the Sunderland defense on the stretch. But you just, you know, if you're gonna put Sunderland players in your team, you just have to know that you are going to have game weeks where they allow it 4, 6, 8.
Yeah.
How many goals did they allow in Southampton last year? Was it 9?
I think it was 8.
Yeah. So it's going to happen. They're going to have games where they look like a League 2 or lower football team. And that's the price you pay.
I'm going to cheat a little bit. I kind of have two MVPs because I immediately thought of one MVP. And then I went straight to another because my favorite moment of the weekend was Riyad Mahrez from Leicester when he, speaking of Sunderland's defense, he absolutely broke Lee Cattermole in the penalty area and won the penalty. And it was just, it was such a piece of skill. And he obviously was dynamite in that game for Leicester.
Yeah, talk about a guy who's had to rate his price to rise. I mean, I think he's 5.5 right now.
Yep.
Leicester have some pretty good fixtures coming up. He seems like a really clear pickup. And I sort of have this plan in my head right now. It's kind of a 2-week Sergio Aguero plan, and Mahrez had factored into it, but I think his price is going to rise too much to make it work now.
Yeah, I think, okay, so my actual MVP, I'm not sure his price is immediately going to go up, but Jefferson Montero of Swansea just looks so tasty against Chelsea on Saturday. He was rampant up and down the wings. He was working so hard. And he's got moves. He can move the ball. He can take defenders on one-on-one. He's going to get in the box. I could see him getting far more assists than goals, though, which could be an issue. Because what he likes to do is get to the end line and cross the ball in. But at 6.0 for a Swansea midfielder, looks like he'll be a regular starter.
Yeah, I think at 6.0, you know, I don't think you're going
to
get.
You're starting to get to that price threshold, aren't you?
Yeah, you need a fourth midfielder, right? I mean, most of the time you're going to be playing 3-4-3, you know, three defenders, four midfielders, three forwards, and I just think that if you can consistently get assists, that's enough, right? I mean, it's very rare that you get what you got last year with Sigurdsson, at least the first half of the season, where you're consistently getting goals and assists.
Yeah. Now, my loser of the week, it's purely personal. I mean, everyone's jumping on the We Hate Peter Cech bandwagon, but he was my starting goalkeeper. If he let two goals in, fine. But the manner in which he let them in, as a fantasy manager fielding him, were just so painful. A lot of the pundits are pointing to the back line of, like, leaving Cech out, hanging him out to dry on these goals. Mm-hmm. But As a big time keeper, I'm really expecting a lot more from him in my squad. And as goalkeepers go, I'm probably stuck with him for quite a while here. I mean, frankly, nor should I be too worried about it.
The problem is it's Arsenal, right? I mean, this is what they do.
Yes,
this happens every year. I mean, you know, you have to luck into those stretches where you can pick up Hector Bellerin during the, like, random 7-week run where Arsenal doesn't let anybody score and wins every game 4-0. But otherwise, it's just Arsenal, right? It's like something crazy is going to happen with a, you know, like Laurent Koscielny is suddenly going to allow a handball in the 89th minute of a game, you know, or...
Oh, he will crazy. Not fail. As soon as you get Koscielny in your squad, he will get a red card and give away a penalty. It will happen. So we've agreed to talk about three standout fixtures on the weekend. So what did we pick, Josh?
Right. So three fixtures that have that have some interesting fantasy implications, or you know, there's players that are worth talking about or worth keeping an eye on in these games. You know, whatever, or just games we watched. You know, some mix of
a fun game perhaps, just a fun one.
Just because I started to talk about it, let's jump to the Arsenal game on Sunday, because this is really it was a crazy game. I mean,
it was certainly the one that had the wildest impact on most people's fantasy squads.
Yeah, it was really inconceivable that they. I thought that I mean, them allowing a goal or two makes sense, but the defending was suicidal. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And the attack was gone. And you can't blame them not having Alexis because they beat, you know, basically everybody they played in the offseason without Alexis.
The feeling was, not even looking at the summer, but last year, that midfield, despite some of the injuries, was pretty cohesive, right, and had dynamite chemistry. You have a great offseason, as they did. That chemistry shouldn't even miss a beat heading into game week one. Though,
the one caveat I would issue is that because West Ham was qualifying for the Europa League, they actually just got knocked out, which is probably for the best for them anyway.
Their manager just field a completely ludicrous under 15 squad?
He basically turned it into a training opportunity. I mean, every single game they played, somebody got a red card. So it was like they were systematically, like, it was all the top players too. It was like Tompkins got a red card.
Top player, Tompkins.
Yeah, well, you know, he's a defender you'd at least consider bringing in. I actually have a West Ham defender, although I have a Agbuna.
It was Michael Davies on the Men in Blazers podcast said that he thought James Tompkins was one of the most handsome players in the Premier League.
I feel like only a Brit would say that, right? He's got that big hair. I don't know.
He's got a nice jawline.
But Sakho got a red card in the Europa League qualifying too. So very strange. I think that, you know, they have been playing competitive games. I mean, assuming that they were actually trying to win. Certainly, I think once you get on the field, you're trying, right? I mean, assuming it's like when an NBA team tanks on the stretch. It's not that they aren't trying to win the game. You know, if you're there and you're playing, you're trying to win.
Sure.
You know, if you're a rookie, you're trying to score. You're not like they're not actually
unless you play in Serie A.
Right. Unless you play, yeah, that's true. So I think that at least many of the players on West Ham have been playing competitive matches for about 6 weeks now. So they may have been a little more up for this game, a little more ready. I mean, Arsenal, you know, the worst thing that could happen to Arsenal, as everybody who follows the Premier League knows, is for somebody to say that Arsenal is the team to beat or that Arsenal is looking good.
Yeah, they don't do well with expectations.
Yeah, if they're a title contender, they're in trouble.
So
it's just the same old shit. It's never going to end.
The same old shit. I think the biggest monkey wrench was Walcott, where everyone was.
You captained him.
I did captain him, and you know, I did.
That was too risky for my blood.
Everyone was pegging him to start now, and I guess this is something I touched on in our very first episode, where I'm generally a conservative manager and I'm trying to do what I can to make bolder choices.
Uh-huh.
So assuming Walcott starts that game, I feel like it's a very sound in logic captaincy choice.
That's true. But it's just that there was, as long as that risk was there, it was going to be hard for me. I did bring him in myself. So I thought he was going to start too. But just that slight concern that he might. I mean, like, you know, looking ahead to game week two, I mean, do you know, that's a game where he's a possible captain optioncy again, right? I mean, they're away to Crystal Palace. That's a game that, particularly given how they played against West Ham, you'd think I could see them unloading on Crystal Palace, right? Mm-hmm. Scoring four or five goals in that game.
Maybe, but Selhurst Park is always kind of a difficult place to go play for teams, I think. I think the atmosphere is pretty raucous. And, I mean, Crystal Palace, great result. Pardew has got them whipped into shape.
Johan Kabay at 6.5 million is a really interesting pickup.
Yeah, who was almost on his way to Arsenal, right?
Was he? I hadn't heard that.
He's French.
A couple years ago.
He's French.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
a couple years ago, I think he was debating between Arsenal and PSG, and I think he had a stronger chance to start at PSG, and I think that's why he went there instead.
So, yeah, that might not be. I'm not convinced it could be a slaughter. You have to like Arsenal's chances, but I don't know if it's a slaughter. But
it feels like a real mess down the stretch, right? Until if they bring in Benzema, that clarifies things a little bit. But if they don't, you could be talking about 38 weeks where you don't know in any given week if Giroud is going to start or if Walcott's going to start, and it's just a real headache, you know. I mean, it's a Diego Costa level headache, right?
Yeah.
Week in, week out, are you going to get what you need. And, you know, that kind of doubt really makes me inclined to maybe not have anybody in Arsenal for a while.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Where do we stand with Arsenal now? After 1 week, too early to make any sweeping judgments, but I think everyone's feeling like they're taking a risk with any Arsenal player at this point.
I think it's a tough one.
There's always been rotation up front with Giroud. There was a lot of rotation in the midfield last season, particularly when they're in the midst of Champions League.
Sané Cazorla's probably going to play most of the games, but he's playing a lot further back right now. So he is on penalties probably still. So that's it's a reason to at least think about him. But I don't think he's quite worth the money. Mesut Ozil, I'm unconvinced by, perhaps because I had him down the stretch last year, and he's. You know, I mean, if you look at the underlying data, you know, he's creating lots of chances, you know, he's in the box a lot, you know, shots are in the box, but he just isn't a consistent goal scorer. And, you know, he's in his third year now with Arsenal. It's just hard to see that changing all of a sudden. I mean, this is what I was talking about with, Raheem Sterling, where, 2 months have gone by. I mean, Ozil is not a fundamentally different player than he was in March of last year.
No, he still likes to walk around. His favorite mode of transportation is walking.
I believe that he's doing great things that you can't see with the naked eye, or you can if someone points it out.
He's moving so fast that it looks like he's barely moving.
I like have to take it on faith that Ozil's a great player, right? Because like the Michael Coxes and the all the great soccer writers.
Go find a Real Madrid sizzle reel of Mesut Ozil, and you'll see some pretty spectacular things.
Do you think if they brought in a guy like Benzema, then Ozil will become more valuable, like a lethal scorer with strength and pace, which is what Walcott brings pace
I think it would benefit Arsenal on the whole. I don't know if it benefits the midfield. I mean, just from a strict fantasy perspective.
Sure.
Because the great thing, it actually might be worse for the Arsenal midfield, because what Giroud does so well is he holds up the ball and lays the ball off for the midfielders to blast the ball into the roof of the net. If you get an out-and-out striker who every time he receives the ball is going to shoot, then the Arsenal midfield, where we're used to seeing them get 5 points every weekend, they're probably going to. I would guess their point output would go down.
Yeah, it looks like they might be bringing in Benzema, which is one of the reasons I've mentioned him a couple times. It's more than rumored at this point. It sounds like the rumors are so thick that you think that it may actually be something that's happening this year. I mean, Benzema at Arsenal has been rumored for what feels like several years now. So who knows? To talk briefly about West Ham.
Interesting because these guys are so cheap.
Are you thinking about, their run of games is pretty incredible. So the next game weeks 2 and game weeks 3 are home to Leicester and home to Bournemouth. We still haven't figured out how to say that. Bournemouth.
Bournemouthy.
Game week 4 is away to Liverpool. Then game week 5 is home to Newcastle. Game week 6 is away to Man City. Game week 7 is home to Norwich. So that's 4 out of... I mean, 2 games where you really wouldn't want to play a West Ham player, but then 4 games where you really feel like you'd want one of those guys in there, right?
Yeah.
So I have Ogbonna, and I'm certainly thinking about bringing in a midfielder.
I mean, how could you not be looking at Rhys Oxford right now? Everyone is... You know, he's really young. He's, 16 and change. Yeah. But he is 4.0. He is... quite literally the cheapest player in the game among all other 4.0 players. But here he is on a clean sheet. He was getting forward. He played really well at the Emirates. And if he's starting in game week 1 at the Emirates, I don't see any reason why he's not starting every game this season if he stays healthy and works hard.
I think you're right. It's certainly long term, but the question is, given that a lot of people are going to be wanting to make moves to bring in Aguero and to bring in Alexis Sanchez, certainly, in the next 3 or 4 weeks, you'd want to be bringing these players in. Is there a move? Do you want to be doing surgery in your defense already? You know, I mean, I guess
yeah,
if you had a really expensive defender, but, you know, if you're trying to – if you're swooping out Seb Coates for you know – did I say that right? Is it just Coates? Did I say Coates like in a really pretentious way? I can't remember how you say his last name.
I'm not a linguist. You're on your own. I'm going to leave you out there to die.
Uh-huh. But do you want do you want to say, you know, like that? So that only gets you, you know, 0.5.
I don't know. I'm sure there are a lot of managers out there right now sitting on John Terry and Branislav Ivanovic and are not very happy with what they saw against Swansea. And maybe, I mean, that's $3 million right there if you swap Ivanovic out for Oxford.
Yeah, and then and Chelsea's next game is away to Man City. So not a game where you... I mean, you know, I'm always willing to bench an expensive defender. You know, I mean, it depends on just how much attacking threat they are. I mean, someone like Leighton Baines, you probably never bench. But I wouldn't be afraid to bench John Terry on the road to Man City.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I guess Zarate is kind of appealing. He's cheap, but he's more of a bench player, I think. I mean, I think a lot of these West Ham guys are great to have on your bench and to bring in during those fixtures you were saying that are that do look appealing.
Yeah, maybe you just need one. Do you have Sakho? Am I right in thinking that?
I don't have Sakho. He is one of those players that was in my lineup at one point.
Yeah. Very tempting.
By the way, this, for all the listeners out there, this will be an ongoing theme where Josh has probably seen my team lineup about 5 or 6 times at this point, and he will believe that I have a wildly different lineup than I do.
That's true. I just don't have your total recall.
Okay, so the second fixture we wanted to discuss was, well, we were kind of leading into it with the Chelsea defense discussion. Chelsea-Swansea, which I think was my favorite game of the weekend. It was probably not the best played game, but it had the most narrative. It had the most – it was just kind of a wild one, right?
It was certainly the best played of all the Saturday games. I mean, it was – you know, both teams really went for it, which, I mean, I guess you could argue that both teams went for it in the Bournemouth Aston Villa game, but that was just a terrible game. I mean, they were just, Bournemouth was too nervous. You know, they were trying too hard. I mean,
The ball was moving at about half speed in that game.
Yeah. So I think, the game. I mean, you already talked about you know, a couple of the players on Swansea who are really worth keeping an eye on. I mean, Ayew's a $7 million midfielder.
He looked incredibly hungry out there.
Gomez is interesting. He's $7 million as well, but you know, he's so frustrating. I mean,
how many
offsides calls were there against him in that game?
Yeah, and we were talking about this watching the game. You turned to me and you said, "Gomez is the sort of guy where it looks like he hasn't had an interesting thought in his entire life."
It's just he's got one thing in mind. It looks like it's just attack. You know, just go for the goal, go for the goal. But that is going to hurt his BPS, right? Because yeah, all those offsides calls are just killers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's sort of the opposite of someone like Eden Hazard, where, you know, if Eden Hazard does anything in a game, he's online for 3 bonus points because he does so many of the little things.
Yeah. So if you look at Gomez at 7.0, he's got the game-tying penalty, but he's out at the 78th minute, and he receives 0 bonus points. I mean, this game was kind of crazy. I mean, I know you're licking your chops because Azpilicueta got 3 bonus points, but how the hell did he pull that one off?
I have no idea. I mean, they apparently made some changes this year.
Oh, you got two bonus points. I'm sorry. But still.
Yeah.
But still.
They allowed 2 goals. I don't know. Very strange. I know they made some changes to the bonus point system. They were subtle. I know they involved the defense a little bit. Mm-hmm. But they were kind of – I think we'll have to see – you'll have to wait a few more weeks to see how it plays out and really, you know, get an idea of some of the underlying stats and see if, you know, if it turns out that the center defenders are more valuable than fullbacks. And, you know, it's too early to say, I think. Yeah. But it seems like every week this seems to happen, right? Some defender gets a crazy number of points.
Yeah. You know, before we move on to the Chelsea players, we have to mention Jonjo Shelvey. And he looked he looked really good in the midfield there and was really dictating the play of the ball.
I just can't do it. You know, I've been in the Shelvey train. It was sort of like Victor Wanyama, who was so tempting as a 4.5 million midfielder, but I wasn't ready to be back on the Shelvey train.
Oh yeah, we've all brought Shelvey in after he scored his usual 40-yard screamer, and then gets a yellow card and for dissent in the next game.
I mean, he's in his sixth year in the league. The most goals he's ever scored in a season is 6, you know, so he's just not, it's not, I don't think it's worth it, you know, I mean, especially when for just a little bit more, you can get AU, who really looks like a, you know, someone to keep an eye on.
Well, that's you keep your eye on Away You. I'll watch Shelvey. We'll see how their stocks.
All right. We'll keep a running total going.
Okay. So Chelsea, what do we do with our Chelsea players? Hazard, he sort of has a reputation for starting slow in the league. And, you know, there are lots of write-ups saying, well, this is Hazard's season. This is the season where he jumps an echelon as a player. But again, we see just in the first game week, a bit of a slow start from him.
Right. And you have Ivanovic and Oscar, right? And you're... No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, we have the same. We have the same two players, right? We have Aspilicueta and Hazard.
No, I just have Hazard.
Have Hazard.
Yeah, I featured Aspilicueta many game weeks last year, but not this season.
Well, you called it. I missed that one. Yeah, so getting 6 out of Aspilicueta is seems very fortunate.
And he is great value looking at the Chelsea defense. I mean, the way it is now, I know they're bringing in new left backs every day now at Chelsea, but at 6.0 and that defense, and he is going to be giving some service if Dave, as the Chelsea fans call him, continues to get starts. He's a good pick.
Yeah, you know, there was some quote that I was reading in the office when I was doing my research before the season where Mourinho called him the best left back in the world, and you know, they sent away Felipe Luis, who was brought in basically to replace Aspilicueta, or at least compete with him for the starting spot. And, you know, he went back to Spain. It just, you know, he couldn't do it. So
he didn't even tell
anyone
he was going. He just left a note. He said,
"Yeah, it was like the old Hulk movie. He just had like a bindle and a, you know, hitchhiked his way back to Spain." I think, you know, I really wanted to bring in Ivanovic because he has a history of starting incredibly strong. I mean, I think he scored a goal in the first game week. I think it was 3 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think 2 of those were double game weeks, but, you know, still. And I think, but I just couldn't do it. I mean, I couldn't, for $1 million, the consistency of starts that I was going to get with Aspilicueta was enough to justify bringing him in.
Sure. I just couldn't afford a Chelsea defender the way I stacked up my midfield. Not that it paid any dividends whatsoever, but.
Yeah. So I'm already planning to bench him for week 2.
Okay.
And I have a plan in place for game week 2. I'm not smart enough to think too far beyond that, so I basically have a plan. I have a plan for like the first 3 weeks, let's say, and then beyond that, I'm pretty much, you know, shit out of luck. So
say hypothetically, Chelsea had a really good matchup next week. Like, say they were hosting Watford.
Mm-hmm.
Would you captain Hazard?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the results are there. I mean, you know. He's, you know, the last 2 years he scored, actually it's the same number. He has 14 goals and 10 assists 2 years in a row. I mean, that guy is about as consistent as it gets. I mean, next week is sort of interesting because there are a lot of players who are really tempting to captain. Wayne Rooney, Harry Kane, possibly Theo Walcott if you could buy into the idea that he was starting, he'd be someone that was worth, you know.
Listen, Josh, I've told you 1,000 times, game week 1 was the week to captain Walcott.
Yeah, well, it was almost proven true. I think he almost had a shot on goal in the second half.
We were close.
So my interesting, the one I'm sweating out a little bit is Hugo Lloris. I had
Pantilimon.
Pantilimon, thank you. I had him for...
He sounds a little bit like a distant solar system.
Yeah.
Constance Pantilimon.
It does, actually. It sounds like an actress or something.
He sounds like a lot of things.
I had Pantilimon until the day before the season started, when I suddenly realized that Lloris was exactly the same price, and the fixtures are pretty comparable, and there's also a chance that he may end up at Man United.
If that happens, then that's a great buy, I think.
Yeah, but I just ultimately, I mean, if Spurs will break your heart much the same way that Arsenal will, but I couldn't justify. I realize that Pantemelon may get more save points over the course. I'm sure he'll get more save points over the course of the season, but you'd have to think that Lloris is going to get you more clean sheets. Especially because the Tottenham didn't make that many changes, but the changes that they did make were focused on tightening up their defense. Although Danny Rose is apparently injured right now.
Danny Rose was a guy I admired from a distance last season.
Yeah, I mean he's really young too, right? I think he's 20, 21 or 22. So definitely one to keep an eye on. But they also brought in Trippier, who if he can break that starting lineup could be really interesting. Someone really worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, Tottenham made a lot of really unsexy moves over the summer, but they shored up that defense with great players. Also, Toby Alderweireld from Southampton.
Yeah.
And he was one of their stronger looking players and in he's this only game against Man U.
Yeah, and he's only 5 minutes. So I guess that kind of leads us right into that Man U game.
Yeah, we're already there, man.
We're already there. So he's only 5 million, which is very reasonable. Assuming he starts every week. So that's why I brought in Lloris. I didn't start him last week on the road to Man U. I started Schmeichel. It was kind of a disappointing game, mostly because I don't even understand how Leicester allowed 2 goals. Like I think they just got bored or something. Like they scored 3 goals so easily that they stopped trying as hard or something.
I think the biggest worry for me looking at Spurs is their midfield. They haven't solved any of their fantasy problems from last season, where Christian Eriksen goes completely invisible for an hour stretch.
Right, and in the 75th minute, he suddenly is lethal, which he was in that game, too. Right at the very end, he started to create some chances.
Yeah. Eric Lamella, like, how is he still even a thing? I really don't understand that.
Harry Kane was a little bit of a worry for me. I think I got a little suckered in by the rate my team stats, which made him seem like such an overwhelming.
It's a really compelling price that the FPL put him at 9.5 because he was just dirt cheap. The value for money is probably unprecedented in the FPL for last year.
It felt like last year for sure. And it felt like the big decision, I think, for a lot of managers was, do you bring in Harry Kane or do you bring in Christian Benteke? Mm-hmm. And I had both many times over the last couple of weeks. And I also went with Kane. I just wasn't sure. There were so many changes to the front line at Liverpool that I was a little – I figured goals were coming, but I wasn't sure who was going to score them. It just wasn't clear who the – I mean, it's very interesting, right? Because, I mean, Danny Ings didn't even start in that game. So, I don't know – I'm not really sure that I know what that front line
is. He's not going to play,
isn't he? I mean, he was really solid for. He scored 11 goals last year for Burnley.
He scored all 11 of Burnley's goals last year.
But I think he was injured for a stretch too. Who knows? I mean, I think Benteke is obviously the starter in that lineup. But I thought with Benteke out, I think it might play on the shoulder.
I did start Benteke in my squad, and you are right. I did feel like there was a risk there, and he's I think only played one of the Liverpool preseason games, and
scored a hat trick though, right?
Well, yeah, but it does worry you though about the team chemistry, and which did bear out in the Stoke game on Sunday, where I actually didn't watch this game. But
we were returning from the Catskills.
We were in a minivan trying to control some unruly 30-year-olds. But I don't get the sense that he was getting a lot of great service during this game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to look at some of the data from that game to see what kind of chances he created. This leads us to. I mean, you didn't necessarily bring in Benteke for game week one. You brought him for game week two, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because Liverpool against Bournemouth at home, I'm feeling pretty good about what I could get out of that game. And Benteke is probably going to be keyed up in front of the home supporters and the whole team, frankly, meaning mm-hmm. that, you know, I'm one of the many who, I mean, Jordan Henderson, great value at 7.0.
Yeah, truly.
If he can provide the service, that's a great 1-2 combination.
Yeah, I thought about Henderson, too. He's another player I had on my – you know, again, we're talking about game week one, right? There's not a player you can name that I didn't have on my team at one time or another.
Some pundit earlier today I was listening to was saying, why bring in a target man like Benteke on a team like Liverpool who doesn't have anyone who can cross the ball? And I'm thinking that's crazy. Like, Jordan Henderson has great delivery. James Milner, a wonderful wing player, can cross the ball in.
Coutinho
put it right to his feet. So I don't know. I like his chances. But
the other interesting player, just briefly, on that Liverpool team is Joseph Gomez, who ended up with all three bonus points in that game.
Right. So he starts in the defense.
Right.
What's his value at?
He's 4.5 million. So
it's a little rich for my blood. With my Reece Oxford, I'm willing to only pay 4.0 for a defender.
So, but if you could get a 4.0 defender on West Ham and a 4.5 defender on Liverpool, that, you know, if they're starting consistently, that could turn into a new template for a lot of teams.
Yeah. Well, we did get sidetracked from Spurs United. How are you feeling about how United performed there and what their fantasy assets are looking like?
Yeah, we really did. We ended up talking about Liverpool for 5 minutes, didn't we?
Team we didn't even watch.
I think that, we talked about Spurs a bit already. Man United, Memphis Depay was kind of who we thought he was, right? He was... He looked very strong and was getting into good positions and was blasting the ball into the 30th row, every chance he had.
Assumption is that that's a little bit nervous energy and it's a little bit waiting for the chemistry to...
Hard to really evaluate. Yeah. Looks like he was subbed off in the 67th minute, so... I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise if he didn't even start the next game. You could see Daley Blind coming in. Ander Herrera.
Yeah.
Juan Mata was really disappointing. I'm really off the Mata train. I know that some people were looking at him as an interesting option at 8.5.
He's just turned into a very streaky FPL player.
And really, I feel like you're never getting explosive returns with Mata. There's never... I don't know. I feel like you don't get that moment where, the 21-point game or the random, hat trick or two goals and an assist.
He was sensational in that home game against Liverpool last season. Was that a home game or was that at Anfield?
I can't remember.
So then Wayne Rooney, Rooney benefited from dicey whether Diego Costa was going to start and also Aguero being doubtful. Wayne Rooney was everyone's lead striker, it seemed, this weekend.
Hard not to have him.
And it was disappointing that he didn't actually score that goal. He had the ball right at his feet, about 5 yards out. And Kyle Walker, like he's prone to do, just ruined everyone's fun.
Given that everyone has Wayne Rooney, I mean, it's almost – given that I didn't captain him, maybe it was for the best that I didn't score that
true.
8 points.
That's true.
Because I think he was captained by something like 20% of all the teams in the league.
Yeah. I think and you mentioned this with Lloris, I think one of the more compelling things about United was their defense. And Chris Smalling looked – everyone was talking about how great Laurent Koscielny looked going into game week one, mm-hmm. strong central defender. Smalling, based on the first week, looked to be the central defender most improved over the summer.
Yeah. So, yes, I think he's a co-captain, or I think he's maybe an assistant captain this year, too. So, you expect him to play most games if he's healthy?
Should call him Bigling now.
I think that's in the works, actually. I think Chevy wants that to happen, so I think it will.
Okay, so looking at the fixtures, I think we could just quickly run down the 10 fixtures we have coming up in game week 2, and we'll just throw our thoughts out there.
Yeah, a minute or less on each of them.
So it's kind of exciting. This is probably not the first in history, but first in our era of a Friday kickoff for a game week. So Villa and United. Villa are going to host United on Friday the 14th. Now, based on Villa's performance against Bournemouth, you have to like Villa's defense a bit. I mean, Micah Richards definitely showed up for that game. Looks like a good signing.
Wayne Rooney has traditionally destroyed Aston Villa. So, I don't know how much stock you put in that. I mean, it may give him more confidence going into that game. I don't know. You know, it's sort of, do you base it on what you saw like this week, or do you base it on what he's done over the last 5 years? Like, is that a relevant data point? It's kind of a toss up, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those classic games I feel like could go either way. I remember Liverpool playing against Villa early in the season last year, and I captained Mario Balotelli going into that. Of course, that was before we knew how big the flameout would be with Mario.
Yeah.
But Villa ended up winning that game 1-0, 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
I could see on any given day Villa actually getting a similar result against United.
It's possible. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tricky one. I could see a lot. I can envision a range of possibilities for that game.
Okay, so how about Southampton-Everton? The consensus seems to be that Everton is in trouble. They have lots of injuries, particularly on their defense.
Yeah.
And John Stones is a little unsettled. And then you have Southampton, a great attacking team. So I'm fielding Graziano Pelé right now in my strike force. That's a good matchup for him.
Yeah, I have Cedric for Southampton, the defender.
As do I.
Who was subbed off.
Yeah, so what's the deal there?
It was an injury. I'm not really sure. He picked up a yellow card.
He also had
an assist. So it's you know, I don't know. You know, I'm planning to start him, so we'll see. That could turn into
a disaster.
Yeah, well, yeah, who knows? Yeah. So we'll see about that one.
So are you feeling good about a clean sheet there?
Pretty good. Yeah, I'm feeling
Ross Barkley had brought his bazooka to that Norwich game.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, the Watford game.
Yeah, and he'd be an interesting player to keep an eye on, just based on what he did 2 years ago. Last season was kind of a bust, though he was injured for a lot of it. He's only 6.5 million too, so you know that's some one. He's a player to keep an eye on. I don't know. I could see a Southampton clean sheet in that game.
So that's the Southampton Everton. That's the early kickoff on Saturday morning. Then we've got our spate of 10 a.m. if you're on the East Coast fixtures, starting with Spurs and Stoke. I guess this would be a game where if you've got Spurs assets, you really put them to the test.
Yep, that's very true. I'll have two Spurs players in that game, Harry Kane and Lloris. May captain Kane, you know.
Does Lloris look ready to start?
Yeah, he actually played in the Spurs under-21 game today.
I'm not buying for a second that Lloris is under-21.
Yeah, they're really pretty loose about that, aren't they? It seems like anybody can just go play in the under-21s.
He's 28 years old. That is a little weird to me.
Yeah, and the Stoke game, I feel like that Stoke team is too. You got to wait till all the pieces sort themselves out. Obviously, they brought in all that European talent this year.
So Shaqiri looks to be close to a done deal at this point.
I want that to happen so bad. Not even from a fantasy perspective. I just love that guy.
Yeah,
he looks like a rugby player.
He is just like a beautiful looking man in that athlete way.
He's like in that 5'3", like, you know. There's a guy.
He's the guy you want to show up on moving day to help you move your couch.
Yeah, there was a player in the NHL who, I can't think of his name right now, but his nickname was Little Ball of Hate. One of the great nicknames ever. And it might have been Fleur. I can't remember who it was, but that's kind of what I think of when I think of Shaqiri, sort of a little ball of hate. So I wouldn't have anybody on Stoke for a little while still.
Okay, so moving on, we've got Sunderland Norwich. I don't think either of us have any players, any Sunderland players over there.
Yeah,
Josh?
I have Seb Coates, I think is how you say his last name, and I plan to start him in that game. So we'll see. Sunderland. You know, last year they would lose 5-0 and keep a clean sheet the next week. So you know, who knows what you're going to get from that game.
I might get on the Cameron Jerome bandwagon.
Yeah, that's interesting.
The non-existent bandwagon. No, of course I won't. It's Cameron Jerome. But he's 5.0, and he had that spectacular disallowed goal.
That's true. I had never seen that before. There was a high sticking penalty.
It's a high kick. Yeah. Some referees are a little more lenient than others on that dangerous play, and I think the consensus is it was just a truly, truly awful call, and I agree. Okay, so Swansea are one of our favorite teams, the hipster team of the season. Mm-hmm. They're facing off against Newcastle, which definitely performed much better than anyone anticipated over this game week one weekend.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know what to think about Newcastle yet. I mean, we feel like we've already talked about Swansea a little bit, so I don't know if we know.
Well, before we started recording, we had just mentioned to each other the Newcastle result, and we both realized, yeah, we didn't even give a single thought to a single Newcastle FPL asset.
Jan Mott might have been interesting if he was less than 5 million, but that would be the only... And maybe Steven Taylor, who's 4 million. But, you know, they're just... I don't like to bring in a player like that because it's just too risky. I hate it in players who don't start.
Yeah. I mean, Papa Cisse was a true force two or three seasons ago. Yeah. But that goal he scored over the weekend was as skillful as the goal that Dempsey scored against Portugal in the World Cup.
Yeah.
He basically just had to steamroll the ball over the goal line.
Yeah, that's true.
Then we got Watford-West Brom. The battle of the W Derby.
Yeah, I'm excited about this game because I have Troy Deeney. He's my forward. I looked really good in the Everton game. He's huge. And
that picture you sent me with him with the ball stuffed up under his shirt, he looked like a comical sitcom character.
He's a fun...
He basically looked like Fat Albert.
He celebrated both goals with this like full-throated, open-armed roar. And it was he just seems like he's got that Harry Kane style. He's just really infectious, like infectious energy. You know, he's the captain of the team. He's on penalties. So I'm really excited to see what he can do in that game at home into West Brom.
So West Ham, Leicester. Leicester is coming off of a huge result, 4-2 against Sunderland. They look very potent going forward. But then letting in those two goals does give me pause with my Robert Huth in the back line. I know you have Huth back there as well.
It's this is a really interesting game. Of the Saturday fixtures, this is the one game I really am kind of excited to.
Yeah, two teams with blockbuster results in game week one immediately facing off against each other. One of them will continue the high, the other not so much.
Yeah. Well done. you're like Arlo White. That's incredible.
Now, Crystal Palace would be a team that I and probably a few other people would pick to be the Southampton of this season.
Pardew teams, you know, start well, so certainly possible.
Yeah. Pardew teams could start well and flame out. That is very true. But then they are playing Arsenal, which...
I think would be due for a bounce back.
Maybe. Yeah, if you think about their terrible start against Aston Villa... Was that two seasons ago? So everyone was saying, oh, Arsenal, bunch of mugs, Wenger out, what a terrible team. And then they went on some incredible stretch of wins after that. So this could be the beginning of the seasonal Arsenal renaissance.
It's just, I think I want to get off the I guess I'm just doomed now. I'm in too deep with that team.
But it is for those heavily invested with Arsenal players, it's a tricky matchup because the temptation is to lay off your Arsenal players, but away to Crystal Palace is just questionable enough to keep the faith, right?
I think you're right. Yeah, you got to hold your investment for one more week at least.
And then the last fixture, okay, so no, we're actually Crystal Palace Arsenal. That's the first Sunday fixture. And then the afternoon Sunday fixture is the doozy, mm-hmm. Man City hosting Chelsea. What can you possibly predict for this game?
It's hard to say. Last year, the Man City Chelsea game was fantastic. It was a 1-1 draw. It was the Frank Lampard game where he came on in the second half and scored an equalizer.
Did he celebrate?
No, he did not celebrate. Of course, he did the like I can't, you know, I can't.
I have a stomachache.
So that game was actually really exciting. It's hard to say. I mean, Mourinho, second week on the road. I mean, I would expect him to play for a 0-0 draw, but, you know, you wonder if the, with what happened in the Swansea game, if that makes him a little more inclined to open up or, I mean, I don't think that he's...
he's so shrewd. I think so that he'll probably just play I don't want to say safe, but I don't...
Doesn't seem the type to make an emotional decision.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But in terms of Aguero, since Aguero came in and looked very healthy today, the day we're recording against West Brom, it could be his first start.
I don't see the point of bringing him in yet. Unless you planned ahead and just left, you know, 2 or 3 million in the bank to bring him in week two. I wouldn't burn points to bring him in. I'm not against Chelsea.
So this is really the week to start putting the wheels in motion to get Aguero in game week three or four.
It's a tough call. I mean, maybe you just don't. Maybe you wait and see how it goes with him. I mean, he is so expensive that it is not an automatic decision to bring him in, I think. Because it's going to require sacrifices all up and down. I mean, obviously, if he goes in some run like he's done in the past where he, you know, is getting 2-3-1-3-2 goals in 5 games, then it could, you know, it could be a real disaster.
You'd be a real chump if you...
chump. But then he also gets injured a lot. I don't know. I mean, I am planning to bring him in at some point. I'm not sure what week that's going to happen, but I would not do it in week two.
Yeah, it's so tricky because at this point, everyone so carefully built their teams and they all teeter on 0.5 million. It's going to take people quite a while to figure how to get Aguero into their lineup.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the Monday fixture for game week two, Liverpool-Bournemouth. That is, we touched upon earlier the attacking potential for Liverpool in this game and how they're going to respond to their home opener for this season. I like the looks of Benteke in this game. And Bournemouth is Cinderella, a team as they are and how likable. I did think that they looked a little slow on the ball playing Villa this weekend.
It's a weird game. I think it's hard to know what you're going to get with them. I mean, I agree with you. You just don't know if there was no flow because they were so nervous. You know, I mean, it was the featured game on Saturday. You know, I don't know. It was just the pressure had to get to them a little bit, right?
So, Josh, we're now definitely in the throes of the 50 Buck Cup, which is our head-to-head competition. Mm-hmm. You ended up, what did you say? You beat me by 4 points?
I think 5 points.
Five points?
You finished with 28 points?
I had 28, yeah.
I had 33.
So you're officially up on me, 1-0. Please wish me luck. Don't run away with it. Let's keep it interesting, at least for all those the numerous podcast fans out there.
You can find us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters. And you can also find us on Facebook. We are always cheating on Facebook.
That's right. We also have an Instagram. We have 0 pictures on our Instagram, but you can still follow us. We're also at Hail Cheaters there. That's Hail Cheaters. Like we're saying hi to all of our fans. Hail Cheaters. And if you're enjoying the podcast, you can definitely subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave your comments and find us at alwayscheating.com where all of this information lies for you.
All right, Brandon, I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Good luck.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
You hesitatedly hesitantly wish me good luck.
No, I meant it, though. I was a, we'll call it a Skype stutter.